welcome to Season 7, Episode 31 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Wednesday, the 29th of October, and we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and in the Ubuntu community. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat thing on the website and in the hash UUPC IRC channel. I'm Laura, and joining me this week are Tony.
Good evening.
Hello. Alan.
Hiya.
Hiya. And Mark.
Hello.
And how are you, Mark?
I'm all right. I'm in charge this week.
Yep.
Uh-oh.
And I'm in charge of him.
Wow.
Kind of blind leading the blind.
Looking over my shoulder, providing sage advice.
Yep.
Excellent. So you're on the ones and twos then, are you, Mark?
What does that mean?
The buttons.
Yes, those.
He's using his lingo.
He again. Is.
Does that mean on and off by any chance?
No, just like...
One and zero, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, it shows how much I know.
You're a binary...
I thought you were the developer out of all of us.
Yeah. At least you can code.
How is everyone?
Good, pretty good.
So this is the first one we've had everyone back properly for a while, isn't it?
We had one before I went on holiday.
Oh, that's right.
Mark was sunning himself in Speedos.
Anyone got any more holiday books between now and the end of the year?
Nope.
No.
Good.
Nope.
So no excuses for not being here.
We'll think of something.
Yeah. You'll be on the buttons next time, Alan. Don't worry.
I'm doing my absolute best not to be.
It is.
Because you know what happens when I control things? We lose episode. Like
Episode 30. Remember that one last year?
Episode 30.
The missing episode.
Ooh. Every so often, it's got about seven people have tried to download it from the
website. Do you know, I was actually looking on eBay for an iRiver, a replacement iRiver MP3 player. Yeah. So that I could transplant the hard drive out of mine and into a... And they're actually really expensive.
Is it because they're like rare artifacts of technology?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. That's the way I like to think about it, anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, shall we get on with it?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's time for the news. So, first up in the news discussion segment this week, Microsoft OpenTech has founded Kainuusha, something like that, a Chinese group to promote the use of open source. The group includes representation from over 20 organizations, including some familiar names like Mozilla and Ubuntu Kylin. So this is interesting news, isn't it?
Is it?
Well, it says it must be interesting. It's made it into our show.
Well, this is Microsoft pushing forward with an open source initiative
in China specifically.
In China, yes,
which is interesting as a market where lots of people pirate Windows.
Yes,
particularly Windows XP in China.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft are pushing a open source alternatives.
So, when you say open source, do they mean open source software that sits on top of Windows?
Well, I mean they're not. I don't think it's they're meant to specifically promote particular open source software solutions. They're promoting open source as a sort of
a general concept,
a way of developing software, providing education on how people can develop software in an open source fashion and so on.
Is that a bit like greenwashing, where green is open source?
Open washing, it's usually called in that context.
Is it? Yeah. Really?
Wow, yeah. It's actually got a name.
That's the thing.
Yeah, that is a thing, open washing. Yes.
Are they open washing?
I don't know. I'm sure they will be and have been accused of that. But then they also do lots of, Microsoft OpenTech do a lot of work around, contributing to the Linux kernel to get Linux and other open source stuff running on Azure. So obviously stuff that's in their commercial interest, yes, but it is actually them releasing open source code and using open source software.
Speaking of Azure, there was a recent presentation given by their new CEO. And he put up a slide that said Microsoft and then a heart and then Linux.
Oh.
Which goes
He also said something interesting about how much women should get paid, didn't he?
Yeah, that was something else. Yeah.
We talked about that last time.
Yeah,
you were on holiday.
But it seems like there's a theme going on here, that they are relenting a little bit and maybe embracing open stuff a bit more.
Well, as you say, in their commercial interests to do so, particularly with cloud platforms. But good old Microsoft, eh?
Mm. What's up? Who thought you'd ever say that?
I can hear Fab going mental right now.
in other news, which is less favourable for Microsoft. Semiconductor manufacturer FTDI shipped an update for its drivers through the Windows Update Service that identifies software-compatible clones of their serial communication chips in connected hardware and disables them by overwriting the device ID.
Nice.
So if you're using some kind of, I don't know, Internet of Things device or some other device that's connected to your computer and the chip on that device happens to not be a genuine FTDI part, which you may not have decided because you just bought the thing, and the people who made the thing put a non-genuine FTDI chip in there. If you'd installed this update, it would have bricked your device. But not necessarily the entire device, but your communication channel to the device, which is effectively bricking the device.
If it's like an Arduino, which you have to program by plugging it in over USB,
right?
Then, Which is pretty much useless.
Yeah, I mean, they see it as protecting their intellectual property because they put a lot of R&D into making these FTDI chips, and along comes some other company who just basically rip them off and copy the chip and make their own version of the chip. And if you're making some cheap Internet of Things thing, you may choose to use a cheap pirate FTDI, and some of them even have the FTDI logo on the chip, so they're being a bit cheeky. Yeah, but that's as a consumer.
It's still not an excuse for them to brick consumers' devices who may have bought them in perfectly good faith.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
I have a question.
Right,
what is an FTDI chip?
So FTDI are the company, and they make a chip which everyone calls FTDI chip because that's the one thing they're most famous for, I think. And for example, it can be used to bridge USB to like a serial port on a chip on a board. So you may have an Arduino board and it may have an FTDI chip on it so that you could plug a USB cable into it. Because, you know, not every processor has native USB support. So it's essential that you put a chip on there that has...
Okay.
And that's what the FTDI chip is, a USB bridge, if you like.
Right. And apparently people have made copies of this.
Yes.
As a licensed design? I mean,
No.
Ah, right.
Yes. As a complete rip-off.
Right.
In the same way that, you know, there any number of chips are ripped off and made in fabrication plants all around the world, many in China, and often they are made by the company, by the fabricating plant that makes the original as well. They just let the plant run on for a few more hours or an extra day or so and churn out another 100,000 parts and then sell those on the grey market.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
But the flip side is, if you're someone who makes an Internet of Things thing or an Arduino or whatever, and you're trying to keep costs low and it's hard to buy a genuine FTDI chip, buying one of the rip-offs is possibly attractive.
Maybe.
But anyway, they've withdrawn the update eventually after everyone complained, and they put a blog post out saying, they didn't actually apologize at all. They just said they want to defend their property.
So if your device has been made useless thanks to the update, even though they've now, withdrawn it, can you do anything?
You could. There was a solution where you could plug it into a Linux device with a patch which let it read it, let it access the device even though the device ID had been overwritten.
And then reset the device ID. Right.
Okay.
Yay, Linux to the rescue again.
Yeah.
Nopix all over.
I noticed that Russ Dill of Texas Instruments did submit a patch to make the Linux drivers behave the same thing as the presumably Windows drivers.
Yes.
And disable chips that weren't genuine. Wait,
Greg Crowe Hartman referred to it as performance art.
Yeah, it's a giant joke, really. Yes.
Well, one thing that Linux has always been good at is actually improving on the equivalent device drivers.
Well, we do like to copy the Windows world, as Fab brought up at OggGamp, that maybe the open source community is always catching up. So maybe that's us catching up.
Okay.
Moving on.
And this week, which would be this week that you're listening to, if you download it straight away.
Or you could just say the date. 7th of October.
October 27th. This week. It's Get Geek Mental Health Week. So the campaign features a week-long series of blog posts, podcasts, events and other resources about mental health issues and how to help people with such issues. And you can find out more at geekmentalhelp.com. Is that right?
Yes. Not mentalhealth.com.
I thought this was like implying that you have to be, you know, have to have mental health issues to be a geek, but it's actually for people who you know, are geeks
and
may not have addressed their own mental health
or people
issues.
Who have and want to, you know, talk about their experiences and maybe give advice to other people who might be experiencing issues.
Awesome.
Is that that we did a we talked about a guy who was doing a was it a Kickstarter or Indiegogo to raise funds to go around and talk about this kind of thing?
That was an open source
guy. I can't remember what his name was, but he was in open source and he wanted to go to open source conferences to do just this sort of thing.
Yes, you're right.
That was really cool. I don't know if he's involved.
But yeah, there's quite a lot of I sort of spotted it at the beginning of this week and looked again today, and there's loads of stuff on there, loads of podcasts, loads of blog posts.
Oh, cool. So,
good stuff.
Geekmentalhelp.com.
And next up, Google have released a new email client called Inbox.
That's an inventive name nobody's ever used before. Hello, Dropbox.
Yes. So so the features of Inbox include bundles, which group similar emails together, highlights, which give focus to important information, and reminders. So you can set your own reminders, kind of like some sort of calendaring application, I suppose.
Or like Google Calendar.
Or, you know, any other email client with an integrated calendar. So has anybody tried it?
No.
No.
Is it web-based?
Yep. Well, there's mobile as well. So you can use it on your mobile device.
Right. So do you have to have a Gmail account to use it, or does it just use SMTP and IMAP and
it's
standard
Gmail.
Things?
It's based on Gmail. Okay. So you have to have a Gmail account. And you know, and
you've got a Gmail account?
I have, but I don't use it.
You don't use your Gmail account?
Not my @gmail.com account. No. I use Google Apps for Domain. Google Mail account.
Right, and you use that through Gmail, but you don't use it through Inbox?
No, because you need to have an invite to use
this
Inbox.
Is as confusing as the date.
So, in order to use Inbox, you have to get an invite.
Oh, okay.
And I don't have an invite.
Oh, it's like Gmail back in the day.
Exactly.
I remember that.
But I don't have an invite. But also, even if I did have an invite, I wouldn't be able to use it because they've only released it for people with a Gmail address,
not
for people with Google Apps for Domains.
Right.
Google Mail.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm sure it will be more widely spread and put its tentacles into all other parts of Google, you know, as always.
Yeah.
I don't know. I actually don't want to try it because I don't.
Are you happy with Gmail? And
no, I'm not. No. But I don't.
Do you fear change?
This feels like a mental health issue that I really should talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be careful; they might put quotas.
Right. I'm getting annoyed with the amount that I'm reliant on Google, and don't want to get.
You should
more
run your
reliant.
Own cloud.
Yeah, I should. I should.
Well, it's not so much a cloud, more a box in your bedroom.
Yeah. Ask me again about how much how badly my ButterFS volume failed in the week, last week.
You mean your ButterFS volume, which you always, you know, talk about how amazing it is.
Yeah, I'm always doing checks. Yeah, anyway.
And that you've been a vocal advocate for. And then I saw a post on Google Plus where Alan said, ButterFS really broke and I'm, you know, can't get my data back.
Yes.
I'm not so much of a fan as I used to be.
That is exactly what I said, although a little bit more
grumpy.
Yeah.
It's a family friendly show.
Moving on.
Tony, what's up next?
There's an Indiegogo campaign to port Sailfish OS app called Meetakulu, which is a client for messaging service WhatsApp to Ubuntu. The app is written in QML, which is the same technology as apps for Ubuntu phones. And basically, the campaign is seeking to raise enough money to provide the Meetakulu developer with an Ubuntu phone. The minimum funding required is €120 for development to begin, but the target is €500.
I guess that means €120 is enough to buy a phone, and then €500 is enough to buy him 6 phones or something.
Or carry on, motivating him to carry on developing an app.
Paying him money.
Yeah.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be nice to be a developer and get paid to do the stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So basically this is to bring WhatsApp to Ubuntu phone.
Well, no, you have to be very careful with WhatsApp because they are somewhat litigious and they don't like people using their brand name, especially for apps which aren't their brand name, if you know what I mean.
Right.
So making third-party apps, you can use their API.
Okay, so it's not just
they can't limit that.
It's public.
So, is it a public API or is this reverse engineered?
I think
and
it's
they can't
public
stop
API.
You?
Right.
Okay.
Or it's been reverse engineered, but either way, it's now public. But it exists on Selfish. So if you buy a Yola Selfish phone, this app, Mitakulu, which actually I think is Finnish for what's up, what's app or something like that, or what's going on or something like that. So you can install that on the phone and use it. But because it's not an official app, it's a little bit dangerous.
And you mean you can install it on Ubuntu phones?
So no, on the I said if you buy a Selfish phone, you can install it on the Selfish phone.
Right, sorry.
But the problem is that... sometimes you get blocked on WhatsApp for whatever reason. So you contact them and you tell them my account's been blocked. And I was watching a conversation earlier on in the Selfish IRC channel where the developer, or the guy who's running this Indiegogo campaign, said, if you contact WhatsApp to tell them your account's been blocked, don't tell them you use Mitakulu because then they'll block you for life. Okay.
So this sounds dodgy. Is this campaign really the best place to put effort? Should we not?
Well, it's a nice idea, and if someone wants to develop an app and it already exists and it's just a case of porting it, that's like good fun thing to do.
When you pay for WhatsApp, you pay to download the app. No, you pay for the subscription, don't
you? Service.
So it just makes sense if WhatsApp just let you do it,
right? I don't know. I think they want to protect their network and so on and so on.
Oh, I see, yeah.
So, third-party apps that hook in and do strange things. Yeah. I think. But, it'd be interesting to see if they do port this across. I mean, it is open source. It's all free software. Right. So, someone could port it, whether it's him or someone else. Be interesting to follow. It's only reached $35 at the last moment I looked at it.
Oh, well. Yeah, that is still the case. I've just looked at it just now.
Okay, but it's got 2 months to go or something like that. So
I'm sure there's enough people who would be happy to chip in a few dollars to maybe make 120.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Euros.
Moving on. Windows has been brought bang up to date with the late 1990s by introducing an app-style package manager called OneGet. Yeah.
They listened. Because that's the reason I didn't go to Windows 7 on my work machine.
Well, because it didn't have apt-get.
It didn't have apt-get, and it was going to take me forever to set it up.
So it's a command line PowerShell type thing.
Yeah.
So you can do one-get install VLC, for example, and it'll go and get VLC or whatever other package from there. I think they call them repos or repositories or something like that.
No, I don't really understand this.
Yeah, it's... brilliant idea. Someone should put an Ubuntu inside their repo.
Like downloads the Wubi installer.
Yeah, downloads Wubi installer. Yeah. Or downloads like a VM or something and just boots it up. There you go.
Jump amazing.
Down. Yeah. It's part of PowerShell, available in Windows 10 Technical Preview or the Windows Management Framework 5 Preview for Windows 8.1. So, and this is made by a guy who we met, actually. We met in Dublin, you and I.
Okay.
Some years ago, when Laura Tchaikovsky set up OSS Bar Camp?
Yes. You mean Davey went over?
You mean Davey?
Yes.
No, I went to one of them, but not that one.
This one.
Where Davey forgot his packies.
There's lots of stories about Davey.
Suitcase.
There's lots of things that Davey forgot that weekend.
And things we'd like to forget. So the guy who created this or is running the project has been doing this for a number of years, so we've heard about him developing this, and I've often wondered what is he actually ever going to finish this thing, is it ever going to actually be delivered, and now it's on GitHub and you can grab the code and it's integrated into the next version of Windows, so that's good work. He's worked hard on that and good to see it come to fruition.
I think it says it's been working on it, as you say, for a number of years.
There
have been releases of Windows since we spoke to him all those years ago.
Yeah, 2008, was it?
Yeah, so we have Windows 7 at least.
Yeah.
But Windows 8.
I guess this is quite a fundamental change. It took everyone else to do it, to create an app store type thing, and a system of installing packages from a repository. Even like OS X has an app store now built into the desktop. And, all the mobile platforms have it as well. And, well done, Microsoft, for keeping up.
Cool.
Yeah,
and finally, we do have a piece of gaming news.
I think we're out of time.
No, we're not. We've got plenty
minutes,
of time.
3 minutes.
Stop complaining and talk.
I think if you look closer, you'll see we're just about out of time. So,
if you look closer, you'll be able to read the news.
I don't read this stuff, Mark. I know this stuff. Okay. Well, the Humble Indie Bundle 13 has launched, as anybody who Knows Anything Will Be Aware, which marks the 100th game ported to Linux by Humble Bundle Inc.
Wow,
that's cool.
Yeah, so in a celebratory blog post, they've talked about the idea of multi-platform releases becoming the rule rather than the exception. And they've provided some statistics for the differences in prices paid by platform for Humble Bundles, which right. is, so yeah, if you're Mac people versus Windows people versus Linux people.
Cool. So this is on average over the whole lot then, rather than just, because you can always see, there's always a graph on each campaign where you can see how much people are paying, but this is like an average of all of the Humble Bundles.
Oh, right. Okay. Including the ones that are Windows only.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it's only the Humble Indie Bundles.
Is this over the 100 games bundles?
I think this is over the Humble Indie Bundles, which are where these 100 games are coming from. Yes.
13th.
Which this is the
13th. Okay, yeah.
Well, I don't want to bore you with too much detail, but on average, Linux customers have paid $1 more than macOS customers.
That doesn't sound like a lot.
That doesn't sound like a lot, no.
And $2.60 more
than
Windows
customers.
But then,
I know, if you look at the average price, it probably as a proportion of the amount paid, it's quite a lot more.
Yeah, I think that number would be more significant if we'd used a percentage difference.
Well, they didn't give a percentage difference.
We could have worked it out, sure. No.
So what games are in this latest bundle then, Tony?
I'm glad you asked me that, Alan. The latest bundle, which is called Insanely Twisted Shadow Planet, Risk of Rain and Tower of Guns. Those are some of the games. They are obviously...
And obviously more games coming soon if you pay over this. Yes.
I think it's a Halloween horror themed... It's styled as the Indie bundle.
Wow, you sound more knowledgeable about this than Tony does.
I don't know. I don't really play games.
That's a false impression. Risk of Rain is a weather app. It shows you what the weather's going to be like where you go.
Is it really spelt like that?
Yep. Risk, R-I-S-K, and Rain, R-A-I-N. I won't go into the details about the other ones, but they...
You can find out more at humblebundle.com, I guess.
Yeah, everybody knows that, yeah.
Yeah. Is that the end of the news?
I believe it is.
Excellent.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that pleases, puzzles, or piques you, tweet us at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. And remember, if we don't hear from you, we might not have enough content, and that can only mean one thing, more quizzes.
And now it's time for your community news. And the first item in the community news, following a request from the OwnCloud developer Lucas Reski and discussions with the technical board, the OwnCloud packages are to be removed from the Ubuntu Universe repository.
Dun, dun, dun.
Whoa.
Yes.
Okay, why?
So one of the problems with the repository is that once an application goes in, you have two options if it's broken. Well, you have three options, really. One is you leave it alone. And the second option, really, actually, maybe only two options. The second option is you update it. That's it. You either leave it broken or you fix it. That's the two options. And it seems the OwnCloud developers didn't have the resources to have someone maintain those packages in the Ubuntu repository. And because they're already in and we don't allow them to be removed from the repository once the release has gone out, we don't rip packages out of the repository. There was a bit of discussion on the tech board mailing list where the developer said, hey, can you remove it from the archive? And the answer was, well, actually, no, we can't, because that's the policy decision is we don't remove stuff from the archive. It's in there and it stays in there. So what you should do is find someone to update it. And there was a bit of back and forth and there was a bit of grumpiness from the OwnCloud guys. I think there was a bit of a misunderstanding communication problem. So it's been removed from the archive from 14.10 onwards, but it's not retrospectively been removed. So if you're on like 14.04, for example, and you get installed OwnCloud, then you're installing a broken...
Isn't there version. Some... Yeah, can't you like have some sort of blacklist for these things if something's found to have like a major...
Well, no, people should update it. The developers should put a new version out. And fix it. That's the answer. Well, you don't leave broken packages in the archive and then tell people not to install them. you fix them. That's the whole point of having a repository.
If, I mean, I'm not sure exactly what the situation was here, but if
security issues.
No. Sorry, I mean
why they couldn't update
it. Yeah, I mean, if somebody else decided to package their software and put it in the archive, and they've got, I mean, the way that they package their software is they have their stuff in the OpenSUSE build service, mm-hmm. which is doing their package builds for them.
Right.
So if someone else is going to build a package and put it in the archive, and then they discover that it's not being maintained, and they still don't have the resource to maintain it, and they never did, that's not really their fault.
No, so they should find someone to do that.
Right.
Which is exactly what happens in Debian and Ubuntu, is that someone packages the application and puts it in the archive and maintains it, and you have a commitment from someone. It's not a small commitment, you know, to maintain something for, you know, a number of months or a number of years. It's a significant amount of work, and someone needs
well, there
to
you
do
go.
It.
But you're saying they should just do that.
No, I'm saying they should find someone.
Yeah,
to do that.
But you're also saying it's a significant amount of work, so they might not be able to find someone to do that.
They might not, but it seems to me they didn't try. It seems to me they complained and said, "Rip it out the archive," rather than go and find people who want to maintain it in the archive.
Who put it in there in the first place?
I think it came in from the sync from Debian. I think it's in Debian, and at the beginning of a release, we synchronized some packages in from Debian, so it came from whoever put it into Debian.
So right. If it comes out of the archive, what happens if somebody's already installed it?
Then they already have it installed.
It doesn't break it?
Nope. Well, we don't rip it out. That's the point. You're running 1404, if you're running LTS, and you installed the package, then you have the package installed.
Yeah.
But it doesn't get any updates.
But it doesn't get any updates. You won't get any updates, and it's possibly got security problems.
To be fair, this isn't... I've seen this before, particularly with the web applications.
Right. So older versions of Ubuntu have WordPress, like, 1.x in them.
WordPress, Moodle, Drupal, all sorts of stuff. Exactly. Where if you go on the website for them, they say, do not install it from your distros repository.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What's the point of putting them in the distros if they're not going to upload?
Because back then, at the time, people thought, hey, wouldn't it be good if I could just apt-get install WordPress on my server? Ta-da, and now I've got WordPress or whatever web app, yeah? And then, you know, some time passes and nobody's there to keep that thing maintained. The person who did has maybe, you know, family commitments, changed their job or whatever, personal reasons, has decided to no longer maintain that package. And so
I wasn't
end up with orphaned packages.
I wasn't listening to the bit at the beginning.
Can't get the staff.
When you say they won't take it out, they won't take it out forever for
releases. They won't take it out from the archive for releases that have already gone
from
the past.
Okay.
Right. It's now removed from future releases. So if you're running 1410 or above, apt-get install only cloud won't work. There'll be nothing there.
Okay.
I mean, what they could do is maybe update the package and point people at the open build service or a PPA or something mm-hmm. like that. But the fact is, that's
not what's happened.
So users are recommended to use the official repository hosted by the OpenSUSE build service?
Yes, that's what I use.
That's where our own cloud point to, yeah.
Right, okay. Excellent.
Mm. Mm. And Randall Ross is the newest Ubuntu community manager.
Mm.
That's taken over from Jono?
No.
He's a community manager, not the community manager.
Yes. Oh, of course.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah.
How many community managers have you got now?
Five.
Are you their big boss?
No.
Oh.
I'm not the boss. David Planella is the head of the community team, but...
But he's not the community manager.
Yeah, well, they're all community managers. So they're all community managers doing different things.
Right.
And Randall joined on the cloud side of the business. So he's doing kind of Juju and cloudy kind of stuff, community mm-hmm. management over there.
Okay.
He doesn't work with us on the community team, confusingly enough.
Right.
See, this is what you're on the community team.
Yeah.
But you're not a community manager.
And you're a manager on the community team, but you're not...
The manager of the community
team. You're not
the manager. That's David Planella.
Right.
Yes.
So who are you?
Oh, my gosh.
After all these years, we finally have to
ask. We should probably interview you one week about your job.
And the organisation structure.
Yeah, it's confusing.
Can you draw us a diagram?
Yeah. So welcome, Randall, to the team.
Yes.
So he's doing cloud stuff.
Yeah, cloudy cloud, Juju, that kind of stuff that we don't quite understand.
We should probably
listen to those episodes again.
Every single time. So what's a Juju?
Yeah, we all zone out when they talk about cloud. Cloudy cloud, whatever.
You shouldn't have to care about it because it just works.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, same as the desktop. Yeah.
Unless it's an own cloud.
Finally, in the community news this week, the Ubuntu Developer Tools Center now has support for Eclipse and Android ADT.
Whee! That's super.
How exciting.
Yeah. So, and there's more stuff will be added. Like people can put in requests for what developer tools you want added to the developer tools center.
What could you use before that?
So before Didrox made this tool, the whole idea of this tool is to make it easy for a developer to install the tools they need to do their job. Mm-hmm. And he, initially, I think he added, what's it called? Android Studio.
Yeah.
Is it Android Developer Studio or something? Yeah, Android Studio.
Yeah.
He's now added Eclipse because some people use Eclipse rather than Android Studio. So it's making it easier for developers to install Ubuntu and then run this command and then boop, you've got everything you need
Android
to be an
Studio
Android developer.
Is Eclipse.
No.
It is.
No, it's not.
It is.
Fight.
It's just Eclipse with Android Developer Tools plugins.
Is it? Are you sure? Yeah.
I've got it.
It's IntelliJ.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh.
Eclipse is Eclipse.
Yeah, I know what Eclipse is.
Yeah, that's not Eclipse.
That's not what I've got.
Yeah, you probably
have
Eclipse.
I've got the Eclipse
then.
One.
Right. There we go. Which was added to the Ubuntu Great. Developer Tools Center.
Cool. And yes. Very quickly, we have one event.
Yeah, Ubuntu Online Summit, 12th to the 14th of November. Join us. Go to summit.ubuntu.com to find out more.
Cool.
Yay. That's it. Well done, Mark.
Yes, thank well you. Done you.
Yes, well done.
Seamless, right?
Yep. It's not so easy, is it?
Oh, I don't know about that.
I am never doing this.
All these years of mockery that I've put up with.
Anyway.
So that's it for
stick around.
Episode 31.
At 8:30.
Yes.
Stick around for the next episode if you're listening live. Otherwise, we'll be back next week, won't we?
Yes.
See you then.
We will.
Bye. Bye.